Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
Produced by the iLab at WBUR Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Here's the scene. An older man and a younger woman at a bar. And she's paying more attention to him than he expected. So what does he do? Andy Christie tells us his story in She Handed Me a Cup from the Fountain of Youth. It's read by Mel Rodriguez, who stars in the new film Overboard and the Fox show The Last Man on Earth.
When I turned 50, my girlfriend took me to a dinner at one of those places where all the vegetables are baby, if not prenatal. And the waiters aren't much older. My son, my brother joined us, making it an intimate gathering of all the people I love. I was miserable. This was it. Where were the balloons, the band, the This Is Your Life surprise guests? What does one have to do for a little extra attention? I mean, I had successfully navigated five decades. If I were a 50-year-old bridge or a decommissioned aircraft carrier, there'd be fireworks. I wasn't proud of it, but I wanted more. A week later, I'm in a bar down near Bowery with Janelle. She's 30 or 29 or 32. Something pretty young. My girlfriend and I had recently met her at a party given by a mutual acquaintance, and we hit it off. Since then, the three of us have gotten together for a couple of get-to-know-you dinners and the occasional movie with other friends. Earlier in the day, Janelle emailed us about a downtown gallery opening. It was exhibiting guitars and guitar art. Vintage guitars. Custom guitars. Historically important guitars, which had been set afire and urinated on. Janelle thought it would be right up my alley. My girlfriend was expecting a late night at work and couldn't make it. But I was free, so I emailed back. Great. Love to go. Thanks. Andy. XO. I'm not much of a hugger in person, but for some reason, I XO everybody. The opening is at 8:30, so Janelle and I plan on a quick drink at 8. She picks the bar. Great Jones Cafe. Thin and pale as a bean sprout, Janelle is awkwardly cute, a cross between olive oil and Emma Peel from The Avengers. Her spaghetti strap white top is tied with a tiny pink bow at the neckline, as if she were gift wrapped. People probably think she's my daughter. On the day I turned 50, I shaved off my beard in a fit of Ponce de Leonian Fountain of Youth pathos. The experiment resulted in less gray hair, but, more obviously, less hair. And now, because my skull is bald at both poles and tapers to a soft point like a hard-boiled egg standing on end, I'm stroking my chin with one hand while we talk. It looks as if I'm listening hard, but I'm hiding. The conversation is light and not labor-intensive. One of those comfortable back-and-forths during which it doesn't much matter who says what. We're two new friends putting each other at ease. You like Alexander Calder? Me too. You play ukulele? I love ukulele. Sort of. Nabokov? Lolita's so dark and hilarious. grilled Swiss?
Me too.
Until Janelle pats the back of my hand and says, how come all the guys I really get along with are either taken or gay? I freeze. Why? Does she think I'm gay?
Oh, she means I'm taken.
Right. I already have a girlfriend. A wonderful girlfriend I love and with whom I've lived for 13 years. She's out there somewhere working late while I'm having drinks with Janelle, who thinks that she and I are really getting along. I'm flattered and unsure about how to respond. So I order another drink for myself. I don't order one for Janelle because now I'm afraid it might look predatory, even pedophilic. And if people do think she's my daughter, possibly incestuous, or at the very least, pushy. But she stops the bartender and says, hey, me too, and orders herself a drink and tells me how great it is to be with a man she actually wants to be with. A man she could talk to all night. And I register that she didn't say somebody she could talk to. She said a man she could talk to. Like, maybe she noticed. I look in the mirror behind the bar and I wonder if maybe, without my beard, I don't look so much like her father. When her cell phone buzzes and skitters on the bar like a silver scarab, she answers it. And I try not to eavesdrop. If it's a man, I don't want to know. Instead, I check my watch. It's 8:45. The gallery opening started 15 minutes ago. Janelle hangs up, and I suggest we better go. But she says, oh, I'm having too much fun. Let's have one more, okay? I'm worried it's not okay. But we order another round. Soon we're patting each other's hands, and when her phone rings 5 or 6 more times, she ignores it. We start debating outsider art, which I know less than nothing about. But I once saw a movie about a mad shack dweller who became an overnight sensation when Soho discovered and then exploited him. When I tell her about this, she says, oh, don't be so cynical, and pokes me in the ribs. And I'm glad she picked the one unflabby stretch of my torso. Pretty soon, we're punctuating our conversation with more gratuitous rib pokes and pats while she runs through a pros and cons checklist of the type of men she's known and the types of men she'd like to know. And I can't tell if she's talking about them or really about me. As we get more and more comfortable, so comfortable, in fact, that I'm uncomfortable, I realize she's right. We're having too much fun. So I mention it's almost 10 o'clock, and she jumps and says, oh my God, we better get over there. On the way, she tries to hook her arm around mine, which I keep straight down at my side as if paralyzed. So she's forced to pinch my sleeve to hold on. But about halfway to the gallery, I bend my elbow to support her. She squeezes. And I squeeze back. It's a friendly gesture. Women do it with each other all the time, right? And we stroll this way, through the East Village. Minutes later, we stop at a loft building near Delancey Street. A retro psychedelic guitar poster is taped to an unnumbered black door. Sex machines. More identical posters line the wall along 2 flights up to the gallery. The stairs are dark, quiet, empty. Nobody's coming or going to this thing. Maybe it's late and they've already gone. But because I'm a little drunk and because I know Jonelle lives downtown somewhere and because she picked a bar right nearby, I begin to wonder if maybe this is her building and she's taking me home. But when we reach the right door and walk in, the place is packed with people. Not only is it packed, but I know everybody. My girlfriend, my son, my brother, my nephews, people I work with, people I went to school with. And all of them yell, "Surprise!" And everyone laughs and points at me, including Jonelle, who says, "Gotcha," and kisses me on the cheek. My girlfriend materializes from the sea of guests, and we hug and kiss. She giggles and says she picked Jonelle to get me here because she knew I wouldn't turn down an invitation from her. It's obvious I have a midlife crush. "It's cute," she says. I hold on to her for dear life. And for balance, I'm staggered. My heart is bursting and breaking at the same time. On the one hand, here is everyone I love. Everyone who loves me. They did all this. The fake posters. My favorite music. Balloons, even. And the walls are covered with giant blow-ups of old family snapshots. Years worth. Generations worth. It's a heart gallery. On the other hand, Jonelle was playing with me at the bar, and I can't tell for sure why I get weepy when my son appears and hugs me and whispers, "What happened? How come you're so late? We thought you got lost." Maybe I did. A few minutes later, I see my girlfriend talking to Jonelle in a corner. She looks angry. So I thread my way over, shaking hands along the way, high-fiving, being hugged, hugging back. When I'm close enough to listen in, I learn that the 5 or 6 other calls at the bar, the calls Jonelle ignored, were from my girlfriend, desperately trying to get back in touch. Jonelle was supposed to stall for 10 minutes, but she kept me there. And I let her keep me there until we were half drunk and almost 2 hours late to my surprise birthday party with 75 people waiting. It was her job to deliver me. But instead, she lingered at the bar, talking, poking. And when we finally left, she took my arm, so maybe she really did want to stay with me at the bar. Maybe she wasn't just an agent. After all, 2 hours is a lot of make-believe. Perhaps she actually was having fun and truly wished I wasn't taken. Or maybe, like me, she was simply enjoying the extra attention. We could all use a little extra attention every now and then. Certainly at 50 we can. And maybe even at 30, 29, or 32. Nothing wrong with that, is there? But now, Jonelle's getting the kind of attention from my angry girlfriend that nobody ever wants. And I can't help standing back and watching. I already got my balloons, my surprise guests. It appears, alas, that I may yet get my fireworks.
The That's Mel Rodriguez reading Andy Christie's essay, She Handed Me a Cup from the Fountain of Youth. We'll catch up with Andy after the break. So what happened with those fireworks between Janelle and Andy's partner, Rhonda?
It wasn't a knockdown, drag-out fight, but it was like, what happened? You know, what was going on? It was, you know, you're it's like so late and all these people are waiting here. I mean, once I was in and settled in and once I'd kind of recovered from the shock, I just had a great time at the party. But a lot of people asked me, like, what was going on?
Andy and Rhonda are still together and have been for about 30 years now. She was excited for him when his piece was published in the Times. But Andy says that Rhonda's a private person, so she was a little embarrassed by how much the piece revealed about Andy's brief midlife crisis.
I like to think I wasn't going through a severe midlife crisis, but I did at one point buy a 1963 Cadillac convertible with a white top and aqua exterior, which is like a dead giveaway. And around the same time, I went skydiving. I mean, how obvious can you be?
Publishing an essay in the New York Times means making yourself vulnerable to the world. And in Andy's case, there was backlash.
It was kind of the best of times, the worst of times, because the piece came out in the morning and I was thrilled and friends got in touch and they were thrilled. And then at some point later in the day, a friend contacted me and said, have you seen Gawker? And I went and checked out Gawker and it just eviscerated the piece, not just the piece, but me. And it interpreted it in a way my worst nightmare. That here's this kind of fat, old, bald guy trying to make it with some young girl. And it was brutal. It was brutal to read. I didn't read the whole thing because I couldn't. Because in one way, it was so insulting. And then it also validated whatever deep, dark fear I had that is what it was about, you know, even though I know that's not what it was about. And unfortunately, this sort of lingering feeling had a little more to do with Gawker than the fact that I had this funny, nice piece in the New York Times. You know, I want people to laugh with recognition. Comedians, the best laughter is not a laugh of shock or surprise. It's a laughter of recognition. And that's the kind of reaction I would like people to have. I get it. You know, I get what that must have felt like.
Andy Christie. He lives in New York City, where he works as an animator. After the break, Dan Jones, editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times, and why he connected with this piece, plus more from Mel Rodriguez. Here's Dan Jones.
Andy Christie is hilarious, and he made me laugh again and again in this essay, which to me was this self-awareness about male vanity. And he just seems to be in this situation, this midlife male situation, where he likes the attention and he just wants to see where that attention is going to go. You have to be able to write about that in this self-deprecating way where you lay it all out there and say, like, I was 50, but it felt really good to have this attention from this younger woman, and I was willing to sort of go down that road to see where that attention took me.
And And Mel Rodriguez says that he wanted to read this piece because he was going through a bit of a midlife crisis himself.
It was just very quiet and intimate and really beautiful. I think it's the kind of thing that on some level we've all experienced, and I could really just, I could relate to it, I guess. You know, I think most of us can. A little attention is nice.
Thanks again to Mel for reading this week's essay. He stars in the upcoming movie Overboard, and you can also see him in The Last Man on Earth on Fox. Next week, Abby Jacobson.
I'm not shy, but being around him made me feel as if I were underwater. I kept my eyes focused on the loaves in front of me and finally asked which bread he preferred. "Oh," he said, hesitating. "That's like picking a favorite child." He picked up a sharp knife and, like Zorro, sliced off a generous piece, handing it to me. My crush was born.
Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, John Parati, Caitlin O'Keefe, and Amory Sievertson. Additional sound design by Paul Vikas. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.